If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manuel Feit, he's Stefan Biankowski. This is the last main show of the Bundesliga season, Stefan. But of course, we're not quite done here yet, are we?
I just realized as soon as you said, "How are you doing?" Something started playing on my computer. I didn't hear a word you were saying. But yes, great start to the show. I'm doing very well. As you can tell, jaded, tired. Nothing left. I'm an empty carcass of a man after this crazy Bundesliga season. But no, it's been fantastic. It really has. I had a really good opportunity to kind of reflect on it when we had all those games at the one time on Saturday. And it meant I could really enjoy kind of Sunday or reflect on Sunday. And especially when I was watching English football and then, you know, Manchester City score after like 70 seconds. And I thought, you know, I've been here so many times with the Bundesliga over the years where we kind of go into that final match day hoping that Bayern might slip up, there might be something, you know, a late title challenge or something.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought to myself, it's nice to be on the other side of that for a change, where, you know, German football's had a really great conclusion and it's the English football that's, you know, a little underwhelming, shall we say. So, yeah. Great weekend, great season, and let's see where it goes this summer.
I think the torch, the Farmers League torch, has officially been passed to the Premier League, Stefan.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially with no teams in Europe left at this point, and you know, Leverkusen and Dortmund still to go in the European finals. It definitely feels like the tide has shifted.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, I have to be careful because we do still have a lot ahead of us. We have a European final on Wednesday, right, with Leverkusen, of course. And then we have the DFB Pokal final on Saturday. And then the week after, you and I are both headed to Wembley. Really, really, really looking forward to that, Stefan. And then we, of course, have that. So, yeah. It's so it kind of feels like we're not quite there yet to really put a bow on the season and say this is wrapped up, because it's not. Usually after match day 34, we are kind of starting to wrap it up, because the only thing left for us is the German Cup final and then, of course, the relegation playoffs. But like it feels like there is some conclusion, at least, to the Bundesliga season. And we have so much to talk about. Yes, the top of the league was more or less decided. You know, we knew who was going to be champion. We knew the five teams in the Champions League that could still be six, depending, of course, if Dortmund win the Champions League. And then, of course, we had some other fun things. For example, who's going to finish eighth? We now know that, you know, eighth place, if Leverkusen win the DFB Pokal, is going to be a Conference League spot, no matter what. That doesn't change. That doesn't change if Dortmund win the Champions League. Because if Dortmund win the Champions League, that one Europa League spot simply becomes a Champions League spot. Germany doesn't get an additional spot because of that, right? It's just that one of the spots gets converted. But we had to find out who's going to finish eighth. We still needed to find out who's going to finish sixth or seventh. Again, the sixth place is going to be massive. At the end of the day, it was Frankfurt that captured it. And then, of course, the Vizemeisterschaft, Stefan. I had a guy who had some issues with me saying that Stuttgart were the second best team in German football over the last few weeks. Can we just now say conclusively they're the second best team in German football this season?
Yeah, I think you're not the only one who was picking up that point this week. And I think Unda have said after the game himself that, you know, when he starts showing some respect to Stuttgart after what they've done in the last kind of couple of months and you know, especially the second half of the season in particular. And that's like kind of what made it so fantastic, isn't it? I mean, we're also going to spend most of this show talking about what happened at the bottom, but again, Stuttgart just kind of flying under the radar because of what Leverkusen did this season. And everything that's happened in between, I suppose. You know, they're kind of wedged in between an incredible Leverkusen and a Bayern Munich team that kind of suck all the oxygen out of the room. But, you know, maybe that's the way Sebastian Hoeneß likes it. Maybe he's quite happy to kind of fly under the radar and what an incredible achievement.
It is a crazy achievement. It's actually 3 points more than when Stuttgart last won the title. I think it's the most points they've ever gotten in a Bundesliga season, eh? 73 points. When they won the Bundesliga title, they did it with 70 points. Also a better goal differential. They scored 78 goals, conceded 39. In the season that they won the title, they only scored 61, conceded 37. I mean, honestly, any other normal year, they probably would have won the title. It's just that the team at the very top, so unbelievable. Briefly need to mention them, right? First team in German history to win the title undefeated. Congrats. But yeah, I mean, what Stuttgart have done too, I think every other year that would have been the headline.
It's also worth noting that Leipzig finished the season with 65 points, which is only two less than their record points tally as well. And that only got them fourth place. And if they had finished with, even if they'd finished with 3 points more than their record points tally, it still would have been, still wouldn't have been enough to catch Bayern in third place. So it really goes to show how good Leverkusen have been, how good Stuttgart have been, but also, you know, for anyone out there who's feeling like a bit of a Thomas Tuchel sympathizer, the fact that, you know, even a record-breaking Leipzig season wouldn't be enough to catch what Bayern considered to be a poor season, and obviously nowhere near as good as Leverkusen or Stuttgart. So, yeah, two very good teams at the top of the table. Leipzig had a pretty strong campaign. Bayern obviously not at the races really from about February onwards, but on paper, you know, not too bad. But like, I guess no one really cares what happens when you're third or fourth, especially when you're a Bayern Munich supporter. So a lot to discuss there. Not on today's show, I'm sure, but we'll have plenty to discuss this summer. In fact, this is probably the first week in a while that just about every podcast we've got lined up has nothing to do with Bayern Munich.
I know, right? I guess unless they sign a head coach, although I
don't know where we're going to fit it in.
I also don't know if you have to schedule that anytime soon the way it's going.
Yeah,
because right now their list is empty, which is mental. The outcome of, I think everyone thought, oh, when Roberto De Zerbi announced that he's going to leave Brighton, right? That's it. That's the guy. Finally got one. Here it is. And then everyone denies it. And it's just the latest crazy turn of events. Of course, then on Friday, the Thomas Tuchel presser, where he basically, first question asked, and I guess everyone was kind of, oh, he's not going to say anything because they're still in negotiations and he's going, you know, you expected the usual, well, we have to see and it's nothing decided and we're not comment on rumors. And he goes straight out and says, this is my last press conference. And obviously, normal pre-match press conference turned into headline news all over Munich. It's kind of crazy to think that's only 72 hours ago. The last 3 days have been mental. So, yeah, you know, the Bayern story, I think, is going to be one that's going to follow us for a while because we don't know where they had it. But I feel also they have taking a lot of the oxygen out of the room of other stories that we need to cover, right? So I think we'll park what Dirk Bayern are doing because, you know, honestly, Stefan, one of us is going to write a Substack the moment they finally hire a coach. It's just how it is, right? They're going to get the attention that they need. So I think we will, let's park the coaching debate for today because I think we also said everything there is to be said. You know, maybe the final point before we get to the relegation battle and the madness that happened there. I want to also point out Heidenheim. They finished eighth. They still have to wait their future, right? What's going to happen? Whether they get a European spot or not will be decided on Saturday. We forget that Leverkusen still have to beat Kaiserslautern, right? I mean, this is still a game that they have to play. Crazier things have happened. And by the way, we also are going to talk about Kaiserslautern in the final and all that sort of stuff. I was in Kaiserslautern. I actually just, as we record this, just came back from Kaiserslautern about an hour ago, and there will be a Substack on Kaiserslautern and my experience there and the expectations I had of the final, etc. And so, wait, there is more on this. But Stefan, Heidenheim might actually qualify for Europe next season, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we did kind of talk about this at the start of the show, I suppose, that, start of the season, in the sense that we looked at how, you know, Heidenheim have really kind of managed to win promotion off the back of some incredible form, you know, home form in particular, really. And we did kind of ponder whether they'd be able to do that in the Bundesliga, and that's more or less exactly what they have done. I mean, their away form was by no means poor. You know, 3 wins, 7 draws, and 7 defeats in 17 games. But it's that home form which has really kind of stood out, which is really quite remarkable. They finished 7th in the league just based on their home form, which, you know, considering that they finished 8th in total, probably goes some way to explaining why they did so well. And it's been thoroughly deserved because, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it, but there's a lot of big teams below them who have really faltered this season. I'm sure Bremen fans would be happy with 9th place, but historically speaking, they're a big club. Freiburg are a club, obviously, where Christian Streich has decided to move on because of, you know, well, for all sorts of reasons, but a very frustrating season in which, you know, the club haven't really done well in the transfer window in the last couple of years. Squad isn't quite what it used to be. And when you consider how many times Christian Streich has kind of worked his miracles to kind of rebuild teams there, you can understand why he's decided to pack it in. Augsburg, a team who really Jekyll and Hyde side, really, in the sense that they look terrible. New head coach comes in, takes them to the top of the table, and then, not literally the top of the table, but near the top, and then they just kind of put their feet up for the last 5 or 6 weeks. Wolfsburg, another team who hit demise and had to hit the restart button. Mainz, another team that have had to hit the restart button twice this season. Gladbach, a team who've had to do the same. And then, of course, that brings us down to the bottom four, who admittedly are probably clubs that you'd expect to be down there, but the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 clubs above them, so the 6 clubs between Heidenheim and the 4 teams in the relegation battle this season, are all teams that not that long ago would have been challenging for Europa Leagues or European spots, even top 4 in some cases. So it shows how many big clubs have faltered this season, and all credit to Heidenheim for taking advantage of that.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, you know, at the end of the day, the home form is that keeps you in the league. You gotta win at home. You know, that's if you're a promoted team, that needs to be your fortress. I remember in 94-95, it's a long time ago, when 1860 moved up, and Werner Lorand, the head coach at the time, said we have to win or draw our home games to stay in the Bundesliga. That is going to be the foundation of the success of staying in the league. And I think if I remember correctly, 1860 only won one away game that season against Bayer Leverkusen 2-0, but they'd never lost at home, or almost never lost at home. And that is why they stayed in the league at the end of the day. And I think that is true for most promoted teams, right? Your home form is the one that keeps you grounded. I mean, because I think one of the biggest difficulties if you move up is getting used to those new surroundings, the new stadiums, the away trips, right? In your second year, you get a little bit of experience, you get a little bit of routine, But I think in your first year, if you suck on the road. It's basically how this works. If you want to stay in the league, you have to be good at home. And that has to be your foundation. And I think Heidenheim, it's no surprise that they did exactly that with Frank Schmidt in charge, right? I think he's the most pragmatic head coach, one of the most pragmatic head coaches out there. And the fact that he is the guy to essentially lay that principle down, it makes total sense to me. And it's, you know, the funny thing, the one funny anecdote maybe from this match day is Aaron Dingshi, the Heidenheim striker. His two goals means that Heidenheim will finish ahead of Bremen, where he was from loan at, and ahead of Freiburg, where he's going to, denying both his former and his future club of a European spot, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, it really is incredible. It's been ridiculous, and you know, they've deserved so much credit, and it'd be wonderful if they can kind of finish the season with a European spot based on what happens. Obviously, it's kind of out of their hands now. But yeah, and it's important that we do kind of highlight these things, because we've got a lot of kind of negative things to talk about, I suppose, on this episode with the other clubs.
Yeah. Well, one in particular, right? So let's move to the relegation battle, because how exciting was that? That's, you know, I feel that the Konferenz, or the Goal Arena, as it's known on DAZN and ESPN. I'm not sure if there is a Goal Arena on Sky in the UK, Stefan?
No, we don't do that.
Oh, that's too bad. Anyways, it was made for that match day. The fact that you could go between the different games, that you could go from Bremen against Bochum to Heidenheim against Köln to Union against Freiburg, you know, that there was this switching back and forward, and us neutrals, we could bath ourselves in the agony that all these people, all these fans across these different stadiums were feeling. And that's what the conference is made for, Stefan. You know, as you can see the teams switching back and forward in places, it was great. I understand you watched the Union Berlin game in its entirety. Good thing you're not an Union Berlin fan, because that was brutal. Just focusing on that game. We have obviously a few people in our subscriber chats that are Union Berlin fans, and I don't know how much they aged on that match day.
Yeah. I got to say, actually, thank God I'm not a Union Berlin fan or a Freiburg fan. It's the third or fourth Freiburg game that I've watched in the last month or so, and just about every single one of them has left me with, you know, absolutely no hope or joy in my heart for that club. They've just been a real slog to watch this season. And yeah, my heart definitely goes out to Freiburg fans, and you can completely understand why Christian Streich made a decision to say, look, it's probably best I move on and we let someone in with fresh ideas. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Conference is fantastic. And, you know, when I lived in Germany, it was so much fun to just stick on the big telly and you could just put your feet up and just make sure you keep an eye on everything that comes through. But I feel like I couldn't keep my eyes off this Union Berlin game. It was really, really, really end-to-end stuff. No sense of defending, no sense of any kind of defensive fortitude, just two teams who didn't really know what they were doing, but just desperately trying to score. And, you know, we did say going into the game in our previous show that Union Berlin probably have one of the toughest tasks here, because Freiburg were obviously pushing for a Europa League spot. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, could have been Champions League at one point.
Yeah,
could have been, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, with a win, if... They could have finished in a Europa League spot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they were definitely still trying. There's no doubt about that. It's not as if they were putting their feet up by any means. And you know, when you saw that kind of first penalty miss from Juranovic, and you know, just about maybe 7 minutes before halftime, and you know, in a half that Freiburg were certainly maybe didn't have the best chances, but they certainly were kind of maybe more dominant, I would say, in terms of ball possession and kind of just keeping the ball in the Union half. The fact that Union had that kind of penalty and missed it was a really dreadful penalty from Juranovic. I did kind of wonder, I was like, oh gosh, you know, is that the kind of moment that just completely deflates a team and they go in at halftime thinking that was the kind of spark that we had, that was our chance to get out of this mess, and we completely messed it up. But sure enough, they came out in the second half and, you know, Freiburg still tried, and then Hollerbach comes on and scores an absolute screamer in the 68th minute out of almost nothing. We were discussing it with some of our subscribers in the subscriber chat about, you know, it was nice to see an assist for Brendan Aaronson, because he really is an absolute workhorse in that Union side and hasn't really been able to get much credit for it because, you know, they've been a dreadful team and he hasn't exactly been racking up the goals and assists. But if anyone deserved an assist, it was him. And then, you know, Freiburg then score a late goal with a lovely header, 5 minutes to go, and then you think, nah, it's not going to happen for them, you know, because obviously Mainz are scoring goals for fun against Wolfsburg at that point. And then another penalty comes about. Slightly soft one, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. I don't know if we really want to get into this, but, you know, I don't know, it just felt like very fortuitous, if I'm being honest with you. I mean, for anyone who missed it, basically, it was one of those kind of penalties where a call was made for a kind of tussle in the box and shirt pulling. The Freiburg defender was pulling on the Union Berlin player, but the only problem I really have with that is the player who cleared the ball, I think it was Gregoric, just, you know, did it with absolute ease, to be perfectly honest with you. Sorry, not Gregoric, I think it was Grifo. And at the time, I kind of thought, well, it's entirely off the ball. The Union Berlin player is not getting to it anyway. So what's the problem here? But no, in fact, it was Gregoric, actually, sorry, I'm watching the highlight now, who got the header away. Anyway, penalty gets called. Kevin Volland steps up. And misses his penalty. And at that point, you're just kind of left thinking, you know, what can you do here? And obviously, we've got so many Union Berlin fans in the chat, and they're pulling their hair out. But then, fair enough, you know, Habera steps up, and he puts home the second goal. And what, 3 minutes into extra time, it was mayhem. And also worth saying, even before all that, Union Berlin's goalkeeping coach had to get sent to the stands because he was fighting with the referee so much. And he did so. He chose to leave by climbing over the roofing to the dugout, and then sat like in the stands with the fans. And like the camera kept cutting back to him sitting next to this, you know, this old boy who's probably been going to the games for the last 20 years, and he's just sitting there muttering away with them about how terrible this referee is. And it was just ridiculous game of football. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Glad I watched every minute of it. And you know what? Fair play to Union Berlin. But I mean, this felt like a get out of jail free card for them, because they've had, I was really tempted to do a newsletter on them this week actually and kind of go into more detail on this, but I just kind of feel like everything that could have went wrong for a football club this season went wrong for Union Berlin. You know, they changed head coaches, and then they changed that head coach, and their star signings haven't worked out, and their star striker decides he wants to leave in January. And it was just one thing after another for Union Berlin, and they've been an absolute circus.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's on and off the pitch. And there's just absolutely nothing about a football club that says they deserve to stay in the league this season. But they have. And they really, really, really have to get their head down and figure out what's going wrong this summer, because it's just an absolute miracle that they didn't get relegated. That's all I can really say to it.
It's, you know, even that penalty call, as you say, like, honestly, Stefan, that's not a penalty anywhere but at the Köpenick, the Fosterreich Köpenick. You know, like, honestly, I think the referee had to call it, because otherwise he's not getting a life out of there. Let's be honest here. That's not a penalty. I mean, they called it, and that's what home advantage is for. And in the good old days, there wasn't VAR, and penalties like that got called all the time. And, you know, some stadiums are like that, where the referee gets pulled into one direction. In fact, I was at one yesterday, right, on the Betzberg, which is very similar to that stadium, very loud and very hostile. And that's home advantage for you. So, no, that's not a penalty anywhere but there. I think you're spot on in terms of them having to maybe have a sit down and seriously get to the bottom of the season. You know, some news coming out today, Brendan Aaronson, for example, having to go back to Leeds because there was no buy-on option agreed in his loan deal. Honestly, he's probably one of the players that I would keep, because, as you said, he's an absolute workhorse. I think a lot of it will probably depend on the transfer fee. You know, but there's other things like Robin Gosens, who I actually think is a fantastic football player, but defensively is so weak at times. That equalizer by Freiburg, like, what is he doing there, Stefan? Like, you know, as a defensive player, you have to be more forceful in your defending. I understand that in this particular game, he was actually playing almost as a winger. But, you know, it's just there is so many players there that feel like luxury players. Like, Gosens is a great player to have if you have a structure around him, right? He's fantastic to watch. He brings all these elements that you want from a classic attacking left back. He's almost like a little bit like Alphonso Davies that way, right? Like, if you put a right system around him where he doesn't necessarily, where his strengths doesn't need to be defending, he's a great player. But if you don't have that, he's an issue, he's a problem. But, you know, there's so many players like that were signed this year, and that is a huge issue. You know, Brendan Aaronson has to play as a center forward in this game. Why? Because there's no other guy in that team, even though they signed, what, 6th strikers? And gave one away on loan. There's no other player in that team that can start as a striker that you trust. How does that happen, right? I mean, Kevin Folland comes off the bench, then misses the penalty, which could have been utter disaster. But he too, like, he's not your classic center forward, yet he was signed as one. So, you know, I could go on and on and on and on and on. And this particular game actually underlines so many of those things. And it was, despite all of that, they somehow managed. And, you know, going into this match day, they were the team that had all the momentum against them. They were the sort of team that was, the trajectory was pointing downwards, right? Bochum looked better. Köln won the game before against Union Berlin. And it all, you know, the stage was set for this great Köln miracle that you and I would have never heard the end of. And it just felt like this was going to be it for them, and somehow they pulled it off. And it's almost like when you get a bonus life at Mario Kart, right? And you can play one more round, and that's what they were giving me here. But you have to use that now, because right now, as it stands, this is a really dysfunctional club, which is crazy considering where they were a year ago. And I mean, there's now rumors that Bo Svensson might become the next head coach. You know, honestly, Bo Svensson is a fantastic head coach. If they can get him, that's great. And hopefully he can bring in a sort of structure to the squad that lacks any sort of, has a lot of great players, but has no plan whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, spokespeople at the club through the season, and the kind of impression I got was that, you know, if you think the turnover on the pitch has been bad, you should see how much the turnover in staff there has been at the club, you know, and not just in terms of coaching, but like in terms of like administrative roles, you know, people like just kind of running the media team or working in the office or anything really. And it's like, it just feels like this club, and you get this quite a lot with clubs who kind of go up too quickly, in the sense that they get a whole lot of money come in, don't know what to do with it. They start panicking in the transfer window because they want to continue grasping it, staying that high. They want to keep the lightning in the bottle, or put the lightning back in the bottle, whatever the expression is. And it just kind of falls apart. And that's kind of what we've seen at Union Berlin. They do have far too many players. None of them really know what they're doing there. And you really need someone like Bo Svensson to go in and just kind of settle them down and be like, look, guys, we're going to finish 10th next season. That's okay. I need, you know, 17 or 18 decent players who will get me there. The rest of you can go. If you want to find somewhere else to pay you the kind of money that we're probably paying you, feel free. If not, there's the exit door. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did kind of just, we'll need to see what they end up doing, but that's what they do. That's what I think they need to do. They need to just have a bit of kind of calm and figure out which players in that team work well. Because as you said, there are players there. You know, you've got your kind of Juranovic, I think, still a good player. Your Robin Gosens is still a good player. You know, and there's plenty more in there. I mean, Kevin Volland presumably still can do a decent job at a certain level. And you can kind of go through that. Of course, Kadira as well is another one who obviously missed the game. But he was once tipped to be a really impressive player, and he's just kind of got swamped by the chaos at Union Berlin. So they need someone to come in and just provide a bit of stability, a bit of leadership, and a bit of calm, and just kind of steady the ship. I know that sounds, I'm just spouting out kind of cliche after cliche here, but it is all true for Union Berlin. And they've now got a summer to do exactly that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Union Berlin safe. The work now starts for them truly. They are lucky, I think, that they have that clarity now rather than a week from now, when the relegation playoffs end. Let's talk about the relegation playoffs next, Stefan. Before we bring out the rubber gloves and dissect the carcass that's as the FC Köln, let's talk about Bochum first. What an absolute disaster. You know, I was certain that they would go into that last match day and bring up a really fantastic performance. And it was, you know, the conference showed this. They were smashed by Werder Bremen. There was absolutely no resistance. You know, losing 4-1 in a game that you held all the cards. That's actually in some ways unacceptable, right? And today the news coming out that Manuel Riemann has been suspended, supposedly because of his behavior during the game, because he was mad with his teammates. You know, if it wasn't for Manuel Riemann this season, they would be in even deeper trouble. Andreas Lute is a good goalkeeper. I'm sure he's a good leader too. I need to add that as well, right? But I thought you want to have your best goalkeeper between the pipes when you're playing against a very strong Fortuna Düsseldorf side. First on Thursday, right, in the first playoff leg, and then again on Monday, 27th of May, in the second leg. I think Bochum are in a lot of trouble now, Stefan, because I've watched Düsseldorf a bunch this year. They're a really good team. And going into the playoffs, having basically all the cards in your hand of securing your position in the Bundesliga to this performance against Werder Bremen, and then, of course, the last minute goal by Union that did send them to the playoffs, I'd be very worried if I was a Bochum fan now.
Yeah. It's hard to kind of, I don't know, it's kind of quite bittersweet in a sense, because I remember the previous show we did before this weekend, I did kind of think, you know, Bremen had very little to play for, Bochum had everything to play for. If you kind of consider, and if you consider who everyone in that kind of final match day had to play, obviously we just talked about, you know, Berlin playing Freiburg, you know, Mainz playing what I thought was a very good Wolfsburg side who still want to play quite well, and Cologne obviously played a Heidenheim team who are pushing for Europe as well. Obviously Bremen, I guess, to the extent, obviously we're doing so as well, but I just kind of thought Bremen would kind of put their feet up to a large extent, as we'd saw from kind of dropping points the last kind of couple of weeks. But yeah, they kind of showed up and they just completely dismantled Bochum. And I think the kind of great kind of what if with Bochum this season is what would have happened, you know, if they had kind of kept Thomas Lech and just kind of let that kind of play through to the end of the season. You know, making that managerial change is going to be the real what if situation when they look back on this season. And I'm kind of torn on it myself, to be perfectly honest with you, because I do kind of feel like Butcher hasn't done a particularly bad job. If you kind of look at like his record since he's been at the club, which admittedly has only been 6 games, but you know, we're talking about a 1-1 draw against Heidenheim. Okay, maybe they should have won that game. They then lose 1-0 away to Wolfsburg. Maybe should have got something from that considering how poor Wolfsburg were playing then. But then they pick up back-to-back wins over Hoffenheim and Union Berlin, and you're kind of thinking, well, that's exactly what they need to kind of get away from the relegation zone. But then, of course, they play Leverkusen, who they get thumped off 5-0. And then they go into this final match, they kind of needing something, and it just didn't work out. And, you know, we started the show talking about the way that Heidenheim were able to really rely on that that home form to project them up the league table. And you could maybe say something similar about Bochum in a sense that, you know, they did have a very solid home form this season. They picked up 23 points from home, which was the 12th best in the league, but it wasn't tremendous. And I think the thing that's really worth bearing in mind here is that while their home form was okay for a team fighting relegation, they had the worst away form in the league. You know, they had no team picked up fewer points than them, joint level with Union Berlin on 10. Darmstadt picked up more away points than them, which maybe goes some way to saying quite a lot, I think. And I remember kind of talking to our subscribers about it during the game and watching the result come in, and I said, well, do you know what? Like, Bochum losing this game on the road against a Bremen side who, yeah, maybe have something to play for in the sense that they can kind of hope to maybe get a last-minute kind of European run or European spot. But let's be honest, this is a game that Bochum should have thrown everything at. And the fact that they stumbled again on the road again just kind of made me think, well, do you know what? Maybe it was somewhat deserved, because they just haven't done enough on the road this season to stay in the league. And hey, look, they may still, obviously, you know, because they've still got the relegation playoff. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I just keep coming back to that away form.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as I said, if you stink on the road, but you know, you're right. I also just think it's just insane that you would throw away that last game. But you know, Bochum against Düsseldorf is going to be really interesting. It's going to be a really interesting relegation playoff now, Stefan. I think in some ways, you know, I think some people were hoping Köln against Düsseldorf. Could you imagine that? But I think this is, in some ways, almost the next best thing. We're guaranteed a big team in the league next year, either way, right? And obviously, if Düsseldorf go up, that's great for the Bundesliga. It's a big stadium. It's one of the stadiums that will be hosting European Championship games this summer. So it's getting a big upgrade. Düsseldorf have been in the news positively with the Fortuna für alle, right? The Fortuna for Everyone project, where they offer tickets for free to all fans for home games. You know, and it's a big city with a big following, and yeah, if they go up, that'd be great. And if Bochum stay in, that's still a traditional club, not the biggest stadium, but you know, this is a team that has a cult status within the league. So, you know, either way, I think the Bundesliga will win, especially because, you know, the other two teams that are coming are Holstein Kiel and St. Pauli, maybe less so because it's from a big city, and they're growing quite a lot in terms of membership. But you know, Holstein Kiel isn't exactly the biggest club, and they're playing in a small stadium. So it'd be good. It's good that at least one of those two teams are staying in the league. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be such a fast. I personally love the playoffs, Stefan. I'm a big fan because I mean, I'm a big fan if I don't have a team in it. It's not great if your team is in it, but if you don't have a team in it, I actually love it, and I'm really looking forward to those games.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see how Bochum doing it. Obviously, they're kind of like they've got plenty of, you know, they've got plenty of experience, I suppose, is the best way to put it in this regard. I must admit, I haven't watched a lot of Dusseldorf. In fact, the only Dusseldorf game I've watched this season was when they played Leverkusen, and my kind of takeaway from it was they were just extremely naive. You could obviously say, yes, they're playing Leverkusen, so, you know, it's not really the end of the world if they lose that, but they were just so open at the back, and the way they were just kind of blindly counter-attacking against Leverkusen was as if they just never really watched a single Leverkusen game all season, and just weren't really aware of what they were capable of. I'm sure, you know, Dusseldorf have done much better from week to week in this five Bundesliga, but I do suspect that they'll probably fancy their chances against Bochum.
Yeah, I would too. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I guess that leaves us with the final topic, Stefan. Köln, you ready yet to dissect that one? I mean, they had an opportunity to do something with this match day and maybe get a miracle done. And the result was like sticking a hot needle on an air balloon. I mean, This isn't even, you know, when the air balloon gets slightly hit and it just still pops and kind of deflates and flies around the room. This one just exploded. I mean, deflating is almost the wrong word. It's just it popped in the very worst way. I sense they gave up in this game. You know, as the goals kept pouring in and Dingsy scored once, then he scored twice, then Sessa made it 3-0, Tigges with a little bit of hope, but 3-1, and then Beste ended it with a fantastic goal, by the way. Beautiful goal by Beste. I just don't even know how this is going to get any better for Köln next year, because they can't sign anyone. They don't have any good strikers. Tigges is playing up there. Selke is kind of hopeless. You know, young, talented players in the squad want to leave the team. This is such a difficult situation that they find themselves in. And, you know, if I look at the second division next year, they're not a team for me that will go up.
No, and I think there's a serious question mark over what happens to Köln in this five Bundesliga, in the sense that do they become another Hamburg or Schalke, in a sense, like not in the financial sense, but, you know, speaking to Matt about it, and he obviously follows Köln a lot more than both of us, and by no means want to put words in his mouth, because I know he has been on the show plenty of times talking about Köln, but you do kind of get the impression when you speak to him and other Köln fans that it's, you know, they're a historic institution, like most things in Cologne, and it feels like they've just been kind of held down by their own kind of weight, in the sense that there's just so many fans, there's so many vested interests in the people who run the club. And, you know, I speak to Matt about this quite a lot, and I kind of play devil's advocate whenever we have the discussion about 50+1, and I always kind of say, well, you know, Cologne are a good example of what happens when you're almost too protected by it, in the sense that you know, you have people who've been running that club for 20, 30 years. It's got a very established board. It's got established boardroom and chairman. And you know, obviously, you know, fan groups and things as well. And it can mean that a lot doesn't get done from one year to the next. And then it kind of adds on and adds on. And they're really just not a very nimble club, to be perfectly honest with you. So that can get in the way when they have to kind of face adversity and have to kind of react and maybe have to start thinking about what to do next in terms of how to bounce back from this relegation. But I completely agree with you. I did kind of feel like they had given up. I thought Dinky's goals were hilarious in the sense the first one was, you know, just a simple deflection, which you can't do much about. And it was almost, the goal he scored after that 6 minutes later was almost like him proving, you know, well, that first one might have been a fluke, but this one, I really made it, because he basically skins like two or three Cologne fans to score. And then, of course, Sessa and Bestie's goals later on were outstanding as well. And yeah, Cologne were well beaten here. They've been well beaten for much of the season. It's also worth kind of pointing out that, you know, people will look at a league table and say, you know, they were just within a whisker of maybe staying up. You know, obviously they finished with just 6 points away from potential safety, but that's really only because they picked up wins against Bochum and Union Berlin in the kind of final weeks of the season. And yeah, I get that they obviously count as much as anything, but I think it goes some way to kind of masking the fact that for most of this season, there's a bit of distance between them and the other teams, you know, who are in or around there, of course, excluding Darmstadt. So I don't know. It's a shame because, you know, Cologne have just been this classic yo-yo club in German football for some time now. And it's so depressing because it's such a wonderful city. It's such a big city. People outside of Germany who maybe don't understand the geography of Germany probably don't appreciate just how big Cologne is. It's, you know, I remember reading something that within like 100-mile radius of the city, there's like 40 million people living there. It really is huge in that regard. I mean, obviously, within that, there are different towns and cities that consider themselves separate entities, but it's a really big kind of part of Germany. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, really, to be perfectly honest, but it's like having no Premier League team in Manchester, or having no Ligue 1 team in Marseille, or having no, you know, Serie A team in Milan or something. Not in terms of footballing equivalent, but in terms of geography and population, things like that, and culture. So yeah, it's a shame, but it's classic Cologne as well, unfortunately.
Well, I guess the region would get a team if Düsseldorf go up, right? But I think that would be very disappointing for Köln fans, because, you know, I have friends in Köln, and they refuse to go to Düsseldorf, period. And it's 30 minutes away by train. That's like me refusing to take the S-Bahn from Heimstetten, which is on the outskirts of Munich, to Munich. Just imagine having that, like, that kind of dedication. You know, but yeah, you're quite right. Köln is a big city. But, you know, I heard this really interesting point that was made on a podcast here in Germany. I think it was on the Süddeutsche Zeitung, on Nun zum Sport podcast. And one of the journalists on there suggested that bigger teams should get more television money because, you know, they have more fans and more people are interested in watching those teams. I understand where that's coming from, because, of course, you know, them going down will mean that more people will tune in onto the second division again. I think maybe one day, Matt, you and I can have a long discussion about this, because Matt might actually agree with this journalist. But at the end of the day, you know, I think teams like Köln are so dysfunctional because of their size. And giving them more money would just give them more opportunity to waste it. And that is actually maybe the real problem here that a lot of these big teams face, is that the size of the membership. And I'm not saying go to the English model where you have owners and all that sort of thing. In fact, actually 50+1, again, this season showed that it has its merits. But I think why a lot of these smaller clubs are doing really well at the moment is because they don't have as many voices in decision making. I mean, you know, oftentimes people say, like, a great example is Bayern Munich. Why is Bayern Munich so dysfunctional at the moment? Because there's so many different voices, right? Köln is a great example of that too. And I think at the end of the day, clubs like Köln should not necessarily, I'm not saying abolish 50+1, but I think there needs to be a structure put in place where you can be both a membership club, be from a sizable city with all the great stuff that comes with it, but also find a way to actually organize your club in a way that you can be successful on the pitch. And that's, I think, that is maybe a lesson that Köln has to take away from this. And if they don't, and they don't do it quickly, look at Schalke this year. Look at how close Kaiserslautern got to a relegation, right? You know, going down to the second division, and considering how strong that second division is nowadays, going up is one issue, but you could go down even further. You know, teams have gone down to the third division and more because of financial troubles and discontent within the membership group. And I think Köln need to have a long look in the mirror and maybe look at some deep-reaching reforms here if they want to return to the Bundesliga anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely have to have Matt on to kind of do a deep dive into Cologne's season and maybe some other Cologne people that cover the league extensively. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And to kind of flip that analogy, you can look at Leverkusen, who have managed to thrive because they're a far more streamlined outfit than a lot of these kind of traditional football clubs, you know. Of course, Leverkusen have, you know, a board. Of course, they have a whole hierarchy of backroom staff. And they do have fans, of course, but it's not nearly as complicated as a lot of these clubs who, you know, not only have all these bits and pieces on the sporting side, but a lot of them have the club itself spun off from the parent company. Both have their own boardrooms, both have their own chairmen, and that's why you have, like, chairman of the sporting committee and thing. It really is a nonsense, and you're absolutely right. Bayern Munich is a perfect example of it, but Cologne works as well. And it's not good. It can't be helpful in the modern game where football clubs have to be so kind of nimble and ability to react to things. And yeah, they're almost like weighed down by their own kind of staff and expectations, I suppose.
I think it's because, and that's my final point, because I do have to wrap it up before I head to dinner, but my final point is that, you know, I think what happens is, and it's almost a mirror of federal German politics, is there's a lot of good about this, right? Because there's a lot of people that can make decisions, but it's also then you have so many different political parties within a club that want to have the input and that you have to appease. And that means you have these massive boardrooms of, I think Schalke is 8, right? So, and that is a big issue because you have to appease this group. You have to appease that fan group. You have to appease that sponsorship group, you know, and that's, it needs to be more streamlined to be successful. As you said, decisions in football have to be made fast, sometimes quickly, right? And within minutes. And, you know, a big club that is playing in England or, you know, the other league that I cover, Major League Soccer, so one person will make that decision, done. And I think that is maybe something that 50 plus one needs to look at, is like, how can we preserve the structure and have a big membership place like club where all these members can be involved but still have streamlined decision making? And that's hard, but I think that's a topic for a different podcast. And it's also really hard to criticize 50 plus one in a season where the Bundesliga has done so well, Stefan, right? I mean, that's bad. If he was here, he was saying, why is everyone complaining? We have two teams in the European Cup finals. We have a different champion. We have, you know, all these clubs doing really well. And, they, you know, he's right. But that doesn't mean everything is perfect either. So I think that's my concluding statement.
We're not complaining about 50 plus one. We're complaining about how 50 plus one maybe accentuates German bureaucracy, or the classic kind of idea of German bureaucracy. So yeah, we're not against 50 plus one. We're against German bureaucracy. There we go.
That is something we can all agree on. And on that note, let's wrap the show up. It's been great. It's not the final main show of the season, because we have the post DFB Pokal, we have the post Champions League, lots of things planned still, so stay tuned. I think this week's program writes itself. We're going to preview the German Cup, we're going to review Leverkusen's final against Atalanta, right? And I think there was one fourth thing on the menu that escaped me. this very moment.
Actually, it's good that you mention it, so we could probably tell listeners who don't subscribe. We have our voting up and running for the Player of the Year, which our subscribers have been voting in their dozens, which I'm really happy with. Actually, we had a lot of people vote. So basically, anyone who doesn't understand, if you sign up to the Substack, you can then head to the chat function on the app. There you'll find a thread from us with our Player of the Year, and that's where our subscribers have jumped in and put up their three candidates for the Player of the Year. 1, 2, 3, ranked, obviously one at the top, 2 and then 3. First place gets 10 points, second place gets 5, and I think third place gets 2 points. And then on Thursday's show, we'll discuss who won that voting. We'll give our suggestions as well. And it could just be a good episode to talk about the Player of the Year. But if you'd like to vote in that, head over to our Substack, subscribe, find the thread, jump in there. It's all pretty self-explanatory. And it's also somewhere where everyone's discussing their candidates, and a lot of really fun kind of honourable mentions for players who obviously won't get a nomination. But yeah, very fun, and looking forward to that podcast.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be great. All right, so that's that. I think you doing your coaching ranking, right, as the Substack. Matt, as always, with his wrap-up from German fanzine, and I'm doing my Substack on Kaiserslautern ahead of the DFB Pokal Final. So all of that is going to be on the Gegenpressing Substack this week. We'll be back soon. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.
Te presentamos a la familia Rubio. Ellos hacen todo en familia.
Rompecabezas, viajes a Walmart,
ejercicios, cocinamos,
todo.
Y cuando supieron que la farmacia de Walmart tiene vacunas para todas las edades, desde HPV hasta neumonía,
pues nos fuimos en familia a vacunarnos.
Y de una vez hicimos nuestras compras.
Like, obvio, Abu.
Protege a tu familia con vacunas para todos. Haz una cita hoy con los farmacéuticos expertos de Walmart Pharmacy. Bienvenido a una farmacia más simple. Bienvenido a tu Walmart. Sujetas a disponibilidad y ley estatal aplicable. Se aplican restricciones según la edad. Pregúntale a tu farmacéutico por detalles.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on!
Crunch Island.
He's Jean-Lit Foot!
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last Crunch Berry!
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries!
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch!
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Head to White Castle for 12 crispy, all-white meat chicken rings for just $3.99. For a limited time, choose from Classic, Hidden Valley Ranch, or our new Smoky Barbecue flavor, and take home 12 chicken rings for just $3.99. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on Auto Trader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.